Tovain Ghazal woke to the sounds of quiet bustle, other women moving about, some talking softly. Lying on her hard, narrow cot, she sighed with regret. Her hands around Elida's throat had been just a pleasant dream. This tiny, canvas-walled room was reality. She had slept poorly, and she felt thinned, drained. She had overslept, too. There would be no time for breakfast. Reluctantly, she tossed off her blankets. The building had been a small warehouse of some sort, with thick walls and heavy rafters low overhead, but there was no heat. Her breath misted, and the crisp morning air pricked through her shift before her feet reached the rough floorboards. Even if she could have considered lying abed in this place, she had her orders. Loghain's filthy bond made disobedience impossible, no matter how often she wished it. She always tried to think of him as simply Ablar, or at worst, Master Ablar, but it was always just Loghain that came into her mind, the name he had made infamous. Loghain, the false dragon who had shattered the armies of his native Gildan. Loghain, who had carved a path through the few Altarans and Mirandians with nerve enough to try stopping him until he threatened Lugard itself. Loghain, who had been gentled and somehow could channel again, who had dared to fix his cursed weave of Sidene on Tovain Ghazal. A pity for him he had not commanded her to stop thinking. She could feel the man in the back of her head. He was always there. For a moment she squeezed her eyes shut. Light! Mistress Doweel's farm had seemed the pit of doom, years of exile and penance with no way out except the unthinkable, to become a hunted renegade. Barely half a week since her capture, she knew better. This was the pit of doom, and there was no mistake. Angrily, she shook her head and scrubbed glistening dampness from her cheeks with her fingers. No, she would escape, somehow, if only for long enough to put her real hands on Elida's throat. Somehow. Aside from the cot, there were only three pieces of furniture, yet they left little space for her to move. She cracked the ice in the yellow-striped pitcher on the washstand with her belt knife, filled the chipped white basin, and channeled to heat the water till tendrils of steam rose. It was allowed to channel for that. That and no more. By rote she washed and scrubbed her teeth with salt and soda, then took a fresh shift and stockings from the small wooden chest at the foot of the cot. Her ring she left in the chest, tucked under everything else in a small velvet pouch. Another order. All of her things were here, except for her lap desk. Luckily, that had been lost when she was taken. Her dresses hung on a cloak stand, the last of the room's furnishings. Choosing one without really looking, she put it on mechanically and used comb and brush on her hair. The ivory-backed brush slowed as she really saw herself in the washstand's cheap, bubbled mirror. Breathing raggedly, she set the brush down beside the matching comb. The dress she had chosen was thick, finely woven wool of an unadorned red so dark it seemed nearly black. Black, like an Ashaman's coat. Her distorted image stared back at her, lips writhing. Changing would be a sort of surrender. Determinedly, she snatched her marten-lined gray cloak from the stand. When she pushed aside the canvas door flap, 20 or so sisters already occupied the long central hallway lined with canvas rooms. Here and there a few were speaking in murmurs, but the rest avoided each other's eyes, even when they belonged to the same Aja. Fear had its presence, but it was shame that coated most faces. Akura, a stout gray, was staring at the hand where she normally wore her ring. Dasandra, a willowy yellow, was hiding her right hand in her armpit. The soft conversations trailed off when Tovain appeared. Several women glared at her openly, including Janara and Lamai from her own Aja. Dasandra came to herself enough to turn her back stiffly. In the space of 2 days, 51 Aes Sedai had fallen captive to the black-coated monsters, and 50 of them blamed Tovain Ghazal as though Elida Arroyhan had no hand in the disaster at all. Except for Loghain's intervention, they would have had their revenge their first night here. She did not love him for putting a stop to it, and making Carnila heal the welts left by belts, the bruises left by fists and feet. She would rather they had beaten her to death than owe him. Putting her cloak on her shoulders, she walked proudly down the corridor, out into pale morning sunshine that suited her washed-out mood. Behind her, someone shouted acid words before the closing door cut them off. Her hands trembled as she pulled up her hood, nestling the dark fur around her face. No one got away with pushing down Tovain Ghazal. Even Mistress Dohweel, who had crushed her into a semblance of submission over the years, learned that when her exile ended. She would show them. She would show them all. The dormitory she shared with the others lay on the very edge of a large village, if a very strange one. A village of Ashaman. Elsewhere, so she had been told, ground was marked off for structures they claimed would dwarf the White Tower, but this was where most of them lived now. 5 large, blocky stone barracks, spaced along streets as wide as anything in Tar Valon, could each hold 100 Ashaman soldiers. They were not full yet, the light be thanked, but snow-covered scaffolding awaited the arrival of workmen around the thick walls of 2 more that were almost ready for roofing in thatch. Nearly a dozen smaller stone structures were made to hold 10 dedicated each, and another of those was under construction, too. Scattered around them stood nearly 200 houses that might have been seen in any village, where some of the married men lived, and the families of others not far enough along in training. Men who could channel did not frighten her. Once she had given in to panic for a moment, true, but that was beside the point. 500 men who could channel, however, were a scrap of bone wedged between 2 of her teeth where she could not free it. 500! And they could travel, some of them. A sharp scrap of bone. More, she had tramped the mile or more through the woods to the wall. That frightened her. What it signified. Nowhere was the wall finished. Nowhere more than 12 or 15 feet high. None of the towers or bastions more than begun. In places she could have clambered over the piles of black stone, except for her orders not to attempt escape. The thing ran for 8 miles, though, and she believed Loghain when he said it was begun less than 3 months ago. The man held her too tightly to bother with lying. He called the wall a waste of time and effort, and perhaps it was, but it made her teeth chatter. Just 3 months, made using the power. The male half of the power. When she thought of that black wall, she saw an implacable force that could not be stopped, an avalanche of black stone sliding down to bury the White Tower. Impossible, of course. Impossible, but when she did not dream of strangling Elida, she dreamed of that. There had been snowfall in the night, and a heavy blanket of white covered every roof, but she did not have to pick her way along the broad streets. The hard-packed dirt had been cleared, a chore of men in training before the sun came up. They used the power for everything from filling wood boxes to cleaning their clothes. Black-clad men hurried here and there in the streets, and more were gathering in rows in front of their barracks, with others calling roll in loud voices. Women bundled up against the cold walked past them, placidly carrying baskets to the quartermaster's storehouse or water buckets to the nearest fountain. Though how any woman could remain, knowing what her husband was beyond Tovain's comprehension. Even more bizarre, children ran up and down the street, around the squares of men who could channel, shouting and laughing, rolling hoops, tossing painted balls, playing with dolls or dogs. A drop of normality that heightened the evil stench of the rest. Ahead of her, a mounted party was approaching up the street at a walk. In the short time she had been here, the endless time, she had not seen anyone ride in the village except workmen on carts or wagons, nor any visitors, which some of these plainly must be. 5 men in black were escorting a dozen in the red coats and cloaks of the Queen's guards, with 2 yellow-haired women at the front, one in a red and white cloak lined with black fur, and the other... Tovain's eyebrows climbed. The other wore green Kandori trousers and a coat made up as if it belonged to the Captain General of the Guard. Her red cloak even had golden knots of rank on the shoulder. Maybe she was mistaken about the men. That one would find short shrift when she encountered real guardsmen. In any case, it was strangely early for visitors. Each time the odd party reached one of the formations, the man in front shouted, "Ashaman, attend front!" and boot heels stamped on the hardened earth as the others stiffened like pillars of stone. Pulling her hood forward better to hide her face, Tovain moved to the side of the wide street, close beside the corner of one of the smaller stone barracks. A fork-bearded old man coming out, a silver sword pin on his high collar, glanced at her curiously without slowing his stride. What she had done struck her like a bucket of cold water, and she nearly wept. None of those strangers would spot an Aes Sedai face now if they could recognize one. If either of those women could channel, unlikely though that was, she would not pass close enough to tell that Tovain could too. She fretted and fumed over how to disobey Loghain, and then did everything necessary to carry out his instructions without even thinking about it. As an act of defiance, she stopped where she was, turning to watch the visitors. Automatically, her hands checked her hood before she could snatch them to her sides. It was pitiful and ridiculous. She knew the Ashaman guiding the party, by sight at least, a bulky man in his middle years with oily black hair, an oily smile, and eyes like augers. None of the others, though. What could she hope to gain by this? How could she entrust a message to any of them? Even if the escort vanished, how could she get close enough to pass a message when she was forbidden to let any outsider discover the presence of Aes Sedai? The auger-eyed fellow looked bored with his duty this morning, hardly bothering to hide his yawns behind a gloved hand.
"When we do finish here," he was saying as he rode past Tovain, "I will show you the craft town, quite a bit bigger than this. We do have every kind of craftsfolk, from masons and carpenters to metalsmiths and tailors. We can make everything we need, Lady Elaine."
"Except turnips," one of the women said in a high voice, and the other laughed. Tovain's head jerked. She watched the riders move on down the street accompanied by shouted orders and stamping boots. "Lady Elaine? Elaine Trakand?" The younger of the pair might match the description she had been given. Elida did not reveal why she was so desperate to lay her hands on one runaway accepted, even one who might become a queen, but she never let a sister leave the tower without orders on what to do if she encountered the girl. "Be very careful, Elaine Trakand," Tovain thought. "I would not like Elida to have the satisfaction of laying hands on you." She wanted to think on this, on whether there was some way to use the girl's presence here, but abruptly she became aware of the sensations at the back of her head. A mild contentment and a growing purpose. Loghain had finished his breakfast. He would be coming out soon. He had told her to be there when he did. Her feet were running before she thought, with the result that her skirts tangled in her legs and she fell hard, knocking her breath out. Anger welled up, fury, but she scrambled to her feet, and without pausing to brush off the dust, gathered her skirts above her knees and began to run again, cloak billowing behind. Men's raucous shouts followed her down the street, and laughing children pointed as she ran past. Suddenly a pack of dogs was around her, snarling, nipping at her heels. She leapt and spun and kicked, but they harried her. She wanted to shriek with frustration and fury. Dogs were always a bother, and she could not channel a feather to drive them off. A gray hound seized a mouthful of dangling skirt, pulling her sideways. Panic overwhelmed everything else. If she fell again, they would tear her to shreds. A shouting woman in brown wool swung her heavy basket at the dog tugging Tovain's skirt, making it dodge away. A round woman's bucket caught a brindled cur in the ribs, and it ran yelping. Tovain gaped in astonishment, and for her inattention had to pull her left leg away from another dog at the cost of a piece of her stocking and a little skin. There were women all around her, flailing away at the animals with whatever they had to hand.
"Go on with you, Aes Sedai," a skinny graying woman told her, slicing at a spotted dog with a switch. "They won't bother you more. I'd like a nice cat myself, but cats won't abide the husband now. Go on."
Tovain did not wait to thank her rescuers. She ran, considering furiously. The women knew. If one did, they all did. But they would carry no messages, give no help to an escape, not when they were willing to remain themselves, not if they understood what they were helping. There was that. Just short of Loghain's house, one of several down a narrower side street, she slowed and hastily let down her skirts. 8 or 9 men in black coats were waiting outside, boys and oldsters and in between, but there was no sign of Loghain yet. She could still sense him, full of purpose, but concentrating. Reading, perhaps. She walked the rest of the way at a dignified pace. Composed and every inch an Aes Sedai, no matter the circumstances. She almost managed to forget her frantic flight from the dogs. The house surprised her every time she saw it. Others on the street were as large and two larger. An ordinary wooden house of 2 stories, though the red door, shutters, and window frames looked odd. Plain curtains hid the interior, but the glass in the windows was so poor she doubted she could have seen anything clearly with the curtains drawn. A house suitable for a not overly successful shopkeeper, hardly the dwelling for one of the most notorious men alive. Briefly, she wondered what was keeping Gabriella. The other sister bonded to Loghain had the same instruction she did, and until now she'd always been here first. Gabriella was eager, studying the Ashaman as if she intended writing a book on the subject. Perhaps she did. Browns would write about anything. She put the other sister out of her mind. Although, if Gabriella did turn up late, she would have to find out how the woman had managed it. For now, she had her own studying. The men outside the red door eyed her, but said nothing, even to each other. Still, there was no animosity. They were simply waiting. None had a cloak, though their breath made pale feathers in front of their faces. All were dedicated, with the silver sword pin on their collars. It had been the same every morning she had reported this way, though not always the same men. She knew some, knew their names at least, and sometimes a few other gleaned tidbits. Evan Vinchova, the pretty lad who had been there when Loghain captured her, leaning against the corner of the house and toying with a bit of string. Donalo Sandomir, if that was his real name, with his creased farmer's face and sharply trimmed oiled beard, attempting the languid stance he thought a nobleman would assume. The Taraboner Andral Genhald, a square fellow with his heavy eyebrows drawn in thought and his hands clasped behind his back. He wore a gold signet ring, but she thought him an apprentice who had shaved his mustaches and abandoned his veil. Mezar Kurin, a Domani with gray at his temples, fingering the garnet in his left ear. He very well might be a minor noble. She was collecting a neat file of names and faces in her head. Sooner or later they would be hunted down, and every piece of information that could help identify them would be useful. The red door opened, and the men straightened, but it was not Loghain who came out. Tovain blinked in surprise, then met Gabriella's sooty green eyes with a flat stare, making no effort to hide her disgust. That accursed link with Loghain had made clear what he was up to the night before. She had been afraid she would never fall asleep, but not in her darkest imaginings had she suspected Gabriella. Some of the men seemed as startled as she. Some attempted to hide smiles. Kurin grinned openly and stroked his thin mustache with a thumb. The dusky woman did not even have the grace to blush. She lifted her upturned nose a trifle, then boldly adjusted her dark blue dress over her hips, as if to advertise that she had just donned the garment. Sweeping her cloak around her shoulders, she tied the ribbons as she glided toward Tovain, as serene as if she were back in the tower. Tovain grabbed the taller woman's arm, pulling her a little way from the men. "We may be captives, Gabriella," she whispered harshly, "but that is no reason to surrender, especially to Ablar's vile lusts." The other woman did not so much as look abashed. A thought came. "Of course. Did he order you?" With something close to a sneer, Gabriella pulled free. "Tovain, it took me 2 days to decide I should surrender to his lusts, as you put it. I feel lucky it only required 4 to convince him to let me. You Reds might not be aware, but men love to talk and gossip. All you need do is listen, or even pretend to, and a man will tell you his whole life." A thoughtful frown creased her forehead, and the twist to her lips vanished. "I wonder whether it's like that for ordinary women." "Whether what is like what?" Tovain demanded. "Gabriella was spying on him? Or just trying to get more material for her book? But this was unbelievable, even for a Brown. What are you talking about?" That musing expression never left the other's face. "I felt helpless. Oh, he was gentle, but I never really thought before on how strong a man's arms are, and me unable to channel a whisker. He was in charge, I suppose, though that isn't quite right. Just stronger, and I knew it. It felt strangely exhilarating." Tovain shuddered. Gabriella must be insane. She was about to tell her so when Loghain himself appeared, closing the door behind him. He was tall, taller than any other man there, with dark hair that brushed wide shoulders and framed an arrogant face.
His high collar carried both the silver sword and that ridiculous snake with legs. He flashed a smile at Gabrella as the others gathered around him. The hussy smiled back, too. Tovain shuddered again. Exhilarating. The woman was insane. As on previous mornings, the men began making reports. Most of the time, Tovain had not been able to make up from down with them, but she listened.
I found two more who seem interested in that new kind of healing this Nynaeve used on you, Loghain, Genhald said, frowning. But one can barely do the healing we already know, and the other, he wants to know more than I could tell him. What you can tell him is all I know, Loghain replied. Mistress Almira didn't tell me much of what she was doing, and I could only learn bits and pieces listening to the other sisters talk. Just keep planting the seed and hope something grows. It's all you can do.
Several other men nodded along with Genhald. Tovain filed it away. Nynaeve Almira. She had heard that name often after returning to the tower. Another runaway accepted. Another one Elida wanted more than the normal desire to catch runaways seemed to account for. From the same village as Althor, too, and associated somehow with Loghain. That might lead to something eventually. But a new kind of healing? Used by an accepted? That was unlikely, bordering close on impossible, but she had seen the impossible happen before, so she tucked it away. Gabrella was listening closely, too, she noticed, but watching her as well, out of the corner of her eye.
"There's a problem with some of those Two Rivers men, Loghain," Vinchova said. An angry flush rose on his smooth face. "Men, I say, but these two are boys, 14 at most. They won't say."
He might have been a year or two older, with his beardless cheeks.
"It was a crime bringing them here."
Loghain shook his head. Whether in anger or regret, it was hard to say.
"I've heard the White Tower takes girls as young as 12. Look after the Two Rivers men where you can. No coddling or the others will turn on them, but try to see they don't do anything stupid. The Lord Dragon might not like it if we kill too many from his district."
"He doesn't seem to be caring much at all, as I can see," a sleek fellow muttered.
The sound of Murundi was strong in his mouth, though his fiercely curled mustaches told where he was from plainly enough. He was rolling a silver coin across the backs of his fingers and seemed as intent on that as on Loghain.
"I was hearing it was the Lord Dragon himself told the Mahale to pluck up anything male in this Two Rivers that could channel down to the roosters. With the number he brought back, I'm just surprised he didn't bring the chicks and lambs as well."
Chuckles met his sally, but Loghain's level tones cut them like a blade.
"Whatever the Lord Dragon ordered, I trust I've made my orders clear."
Every head nodded this time, and some men murmured, "Yes, Loghain," and, "As you say, Loghain." Tovain hastily smoothed the sneer from her lips. Ignorant louts. The tower accepted girls under 15 only if they had already begun channeling. The other was interesting, though. The Two Rivers again. Everyone said Althor had turned his back on his home, but she was not so certain. Why was Gabrella watching her?
"Last night," Sandomir said after a moment, "I learned that Mishraela is having private lessons from the Mahale."
He stroked his pointed beard with satisfaction, as if he had produced a gem of great price. Perhaps he had, but Tovain could not say what kind. Loghain nodded slowly. The others exchanged silent looks with faces that might have been carved. She chewed frustration, watching. Too often it was like this, matters they saw no reason to comment on, or feared to, and she did not understand. She always felt there were gems hidden there beyond her reach. A wide Kyrianan fellow, barely as tall as Loghain's chest, opened his mouth, but whether he meant to speak of Mishraela, whoever he was, she never found out.
"Loghain!"
Wellin Kajima pounded down the street at a dead run, the bells at the ends of his black braids jangling. Another dedicated, a man in his middle years who smiled too much, he had been there when Loghain captured her, too. Kajima had bonded Janara. He was almost out of breath when he pushed through the other men, and he was not smiling now.
"Loghain," he panted. "The Mahale's back from Kyrian, and he's posted new deserters on the board at the palace. You won't believe the names."
He spilled out his list in a breathless rush amid exclamations from the others that kept Tovain from hearing more than fragments.
dedicated have deserted before, the Kyrianin muttered when Kajima was done, but never a full Ashaman. And now 7 at once? If you don't believe me, Kajima began, drawing himself up in a fussy manner. He had been a clerk in Arafel. We believe you, Genhald said soothingly. But Gedwin and Torval, they are the Mahale's men. Rochide and Kismen, too. Why would they desert? He gave them anything a king could want. Kajima shook his head irritably, making his bells chime. You know the list never gives reasons, just names.
Good riddance, Kurin growled. At least it would be if we didn't have to hunt them down now.
It's the others I cannot understand, Sandomir put in. I was at Dumai's Wells. I saw the Lord Dragon choose after. Dashiva had his head in the clouds like always, but Flynn, Hopwill, Narishma? You never saw men more pleased. They were like lambs let loose in the barley shed. A sturdy fellow with gray in his hair spat.
Well, I wasn't at the Wells, but I went south against the Seanchan.
His accents were Andoran.
Maybe the lambs didn't like the butcher's yard as much as they did the barley shed.
Loghain had been listening without taking part, arms folded across his chest. His face was unreadable, a mask.
Do you worry about the butcher's yard, Canler? He said now.
The Andoran grimaced, then shrugged.
I reckon we're all headed there soon or late, Loghain. Don't see we have much choice, but I don't have to grin about it. As long as you're there on the day, Loghain said quietly.
He addressed the man called Canler, but several of the others nodded. Looking past the men, Loghain considered Tovain and Gabrella. Tovain tried to look as if she had not been eavesdropping and remembering names fiercely.
Go inside out of the cold, he told them. Have some tea to warm you. I'll be back as soon as I can. Don't touch my papers.
Gathering up the other men with a gesture, he led them off in the direction Kajima had come from. Tovain gritted her teeth in frustration. At least she would not have to follow him to the training grounds, past the so-called traitor's tree, where heads hung like diseased fruit from the bare branches, and watch men studying how to destroy with the power. But she had hoped for another day to herself, free to wander about and see what she could learn. She had heard men speak of Taim's palace before, and today she had hoped to find it and perhaps catch a glimpse of the man whose name was as black as Loghain's. Instead, she meekly followed the other woman through the red door. There was no use fighting it. Inside, she looked around the front room while Gabrella hung her cloak on a peg. Despite the exterior, she had expected something grander for Loghain. A low fire burned in a rough stone fireplace. A long, narrow table and ladder-backed chairs stood on bare floorboards. A desk, only slightly more elaborate than the other furnishings, caught her eye. Stacks of lidded letterboxes littered the desktop, and leather folders full of long sheets of paper. Her fingers itched, but she knew that even if she sat at the desk, she would not be able to lay a finger on anything more than the pen or glass ink bottle. With a sigh, she followed Gabrella into the kitchen, where an iron stove gave too much heat, and dirty breakfast dishes sat on a low cabinet beneath the window. Gabrella filled a tea kettle and put it on the stove, then took a green glazed teapot and a wooden canister from another cabinet. Tovain draped her cloak over a chair and sat down at the square table. She did not want tea unless it came with the breakfast she had missed, but she knew she was going to drink it. The silly brown nattered on as she carried out her domestic tasks like a contented farm wife. I've learned a good deal already. Loghain is the only full Ashaman to live here in this village. The others all live in Taim's palace. They have servants, but Loghain hired the wife of a man in training to cook and clean for him. She'll be here soon, and she thinks he put the sun in the sky, so we best be done talking anything important by then. He found your lap desk. Tovain felt as though an icy hand had seized her throat. She tried to hide it, but Gabrella was looking straight at her. He burned it, Tovain, after reading the contents. He seemed to think he had done us a favor. The hand eased, and Tovain could breathe again.
Elida's order was among my papers.
She cleared her throat to rid herself of hoarseness. Elida's order to gentle every man found here and then hang them on the spot, without the trial in Tarvalen required by Tower law. She imposed harsh conditions, and these men would have reacted harshly if they knew.
In spite of the heat from the stove, she shivered. That single paper could have gotten them all stilled and hanged.
Why would he do us favors?
I don't know why, Tovain. He isn't a villain, no more than most men. It could be as simple as that.
Gabriella set a plate of crusted rolls and another with white cheese on the table.
Or it could be that this bond is like the warder bond in more ways than we know. Maybe he just did not want to experience the two of us being executed.
Tovain's stomach rumbled, but she picked up a roll as if she did not care for more than a nibble.
I suspect harsh was a mild choice of words, Gabriella went on, spooning tea into the teapot. I saw you flinch. Of course, they went to a great deal of trouble to bring us here. 51 sisters in their midst, and even with the bond, they must fear we'll find some way around their orders, some loophole they missed. The obvious answer is, if we were dead, the tower would be roused to fury. With us alive and captive, even Elida will move cautiously.
She laughed, quietly amused.
Your face, Tovain. Did you think I've spent all my time thinking about tangling my fingers in Loghain's hair?
Tovain closed her mouth and put down the untouched roll. It was cold, anyway, and felt hard. Always a mistake to assume Browns were unworldly, absorbed in their books and studies to the exclusion of everything else.
What else have you seen?
Still gripping the spoon, Gabriella sat across the table from her and leaned forward intently.
Their wall may be strong when it's done, but this place is full of fractures. There is Mazrim Taim's faction and Loghain's faction, though I am uncertain either thinks of them so. Perhaps other factions, too, and certainly men who don't know there are factions. 51 sisters should be able to make something of that, even with the bond. The second question is, what do we make of it?
The second question? Tovain demanded, but the other woman merely waited. If we manage to break those fissures open, she said finally, we scatter 10 or 50 or 100 bands across the world, each more dangerous than any army ever seen. Catching them all might take a lifetime and rip the world apart like a new breaking, and that with Tarman Gaiden on its way. That is, if this fellow Al-Thor really is the Dragon Reborn.
Gabriella opened her mouth, but Tovain waved away whatever she was going to say.
That he was, very likely. It hardly mattered, here and now. But if we don't... Put down the rebellion and gather those sisters back to the tower, call back every retired sister, and I don't know whether all of us together could destroy this place. I suspect half the tower would die in the attempt either way.
What is the first question?
Gabriella leaned back in her chair, her face suddenly weary.
Yes, not an easy decision. And they bring in more men every day. 15 or 20 since we've been here, I believe.
I won't be trifled with, Gabriella. What is the first question?
The Brown's gaze sharpened, stared at her for a long moment. Soon the shock will wear off, she said finally. What comes then? The authority Elida gave you is finished. The expedition is finished. The first question is, are we 51 sisters united, or do we revert to being Browns and Reds, Yellows and Greens and Greys? And poor Ayako, who must be regretting that the Whites insisted on having a sister included. Lamai and Asandra stand highest among us.
Gabriella waved the spoon in admonishment.
The only chance we have of holding together is if you and I publicly submit to Desandra's authority. We must. That will start it at any rate, I hope. If we can only bring a few others to begin with, it will be a start.
Tovain drew a deep breath and pretended to stare at nothing, as if considering. Submitting to a sister who stood higher than she was no hardship in itself. The Ajahs had always kept secrets, and sometimes schemed a little against one another, but the open dissension in the tower now appalled her. Besides, she had learned how to be humble before Mistress Doeil. She wondered how the woman enjoyed poverty, and working on a farm for a taskmistress even harsher than herself.
I can bring myself to it, she said finally. We should have a plan of action to present to Desandra and Lamai if we mean to convince them.
She already had one partly formed, if not for presentation to anyone.
Oh, the water is boiling, Gabriella.
Suddenly smiling, the foolish woman rose and hurried to the stove. Browns always were better reading books than people, come to think of it. Before Loghain and Taim and the rest were destroyed, They would help Tovain Ghazal bring down Elida.
The great city of Kyrian was a hulking mass inside massive walls, crowding the river Alguenia. The sky was clear and cloudless, but a cold wind blew, and the sun shone on roofs covered with snow, glinted on icicles that showed no sign of melting. The Alguenia was not frozen, but small, jagged ice floes from farther upstream spun in the currents, now and then banging against the hulls of ships waiting their turns at the docks. Trade slowed for winter and wars, and the dragon reborn. But it never really stopped. Not until nations died. Despite the cold, wagons and carts and people flowed along streets that razored the terraced hills of the city. The city, it was called here. In front of the square-towered Sun Palace, a crowd jammed together around the long entry ramp and stared up, merchants wrapped in fine woolens and nobles in velvets rubbing shoulders with grimy-faced laborers and dirtier refugees. No one cared who stood next to him, and even the cutpurses forgot to follow their trade. Men and women departed, often shaking their heads, but others took their places, sometimes hoisting a child to get a better view of the palace's ruined wing, where workmen were clearing away the rubble of the third story. Throughout the rest of Kyrian, craftsmen's hammers and creaking axles filled the air, together with the cries of shopkeepers, the complaints of buyers, the murmurs of merchants. The crowd before the Sun Palace was silent. A mile from the palace, Rand stood at a window in the grandly named Academy of Kyrian, peering through the frosted panes at the stone-paved stable-yard below. There had been schools called academies in Arthur Hawkwing's time and before, centers of learning filled with scholars from every corner of the known world. The conceit made no difference. They could have called it the barn, so long as it did what he wanted. More important concerns filled his thoughts. Had he made a mistake, returning to Kyrian so soon? But he had been forced to flee too quickly, so it would be known in the right quarters that he actually had fled. Too quickly to prepare everything. There were questions he needed to ask, and tasks that could not be put off. And Min wanted more of Master Fell's books. He could hear her muttering to herself as she rummaged through the shelves where they had been stored after Fell's death. With the bounty for books and manuscripts it did not yet possess, the Academy's library was fast outgrowing the rooms that could be spared in Lord Barthanas's former palace. Alana sat in the back of his head, sulking, it seemed. She would know he was in the city. This near, she would be able to walk straight to him. But he would know if she tried. Blessedly, Luz Theron was silent for the moment. Of late, the man seemed madder than ever. He rubbed a spot clear on a window pane with his coat sleeve. Stout, dark gray wool, good enough for a man with a little money and few heirs, it was not a garment anyone would expect to see on the Dragon Reborn. The golden-maned dragon's head on the back of his hand glittered metallically. It presented no danger here. His boot touched the leather scrip sitting below the window as he leaned forward to look out. In the stable yard, the paving stones had been swept clear of snow, and a large wagon stood surrounded by buckets like mushrooms in a clearing. Half a dozen men in heavy coats and scarves and caps seemed to be working on the wagon's odd cargo, mechanical devices crowded around a fat metal cylinder that took up more than half the wagon bed. Even stranger, the wagon shafts were missing. One of the men was moving split firewood from a large wheelbarrow into the side of a metal box fastened below one end of the big cylinder. The open door in the box glowed with the red of fire inside, and smoke rose from a tall, narrow chimney. Another fellow danced around the wagon, bearded, capless, and bald-headed, gesturing and apparently shouting orders that did not seem to make the others move any faster. Their breath made faint white plumes. It was almost warm inside. The academy had large furnaces in the cellars and an extensive system of vents. The half-healed, never-healing wounds in his side were hot. He could make out Min's curses. He was sure they were curses, but her tone was enough to say they would not be leaving yet unless he dragged her away. There were one or two items he might ask about still. What are people saying about the palace? What you might expect, Lord Dobraine answered behind him with level patience, as he had answered all the other questions. Even when he admitted a lack of knowledge, his tone had not changed. Some say the Forsaken attacked you, or that Aes Sedai did. Those who think you swore fealty to the Amaran seat favor the Forsaken. Either way, there is considerable debate on whether you are dead or kidnapped or fled. Most believe you live, wherever you are, or say they do. Some, a good many, I fear, think... His voice faded to silence. That I've gone mad, Rand finished for him in the same level tone. Not a matter for concern or anger. That I destroyed part of the palace myself? He would not speak of the dead. Fewer than other times, other places, but enough, and some of their names appeared whenever he closed his eyes. One of the men below climbed down from the wagon, but the bald fellow caught his arm and dragged him back up, making him show what he had done. A man on the other side jumped to the pavement carelessly, skidding, and the capless man abandoned the first to chase around the wagon and make that one climb back up with him. What in the light could they be doing? Rand glanced over his shoulder. They're not far wrong. Dobraine Taberwin, a short man with the front of his head shaved and formerly powdered and the rest of his hair nearly all gray, looked back with dark, impassive eyes. Not a handsome man, but steady. Blue and white stripes marched down the front of his dark velvet coat from his neck almost to his knees. His signet ring was a carved ruby, and he wore another at his collar, not much larger, yet flamboyant for a Kyrianan. He was high seat of his house, with more battles behind him than most, and not much frightened him. He had proved that at Dumai's Wells. But then the stocky, graying woman patiently waiting her turn at his shoulder appeared just as unafraid. In sharp contrast to Dobraine's noble elegance, Idrian Tarson's sensible brown woolens were plain enough for a shopkeeper, yet she had her own well of authority and dignity. Idrian was headmistress of the academy, the title she had given herself since most of the scholars and mechanics called themselves master of this or mistress of that. She ran the school with a strong hand and believed in practical things, new methods of surfacing roads or making dyes, improvements to foundries and mills. She also believed in the Dragon Reborn. Whether or not that was practical, it was pragmatic, and he would settle for that. He turned back to the window and cleared his patch on the glass again. Maybe it was for heating water. Some of those buckets seemed to have water in them still. In Shinar, they used big boilers to heat water for the baths. But why on a wagon? Has anyone left suddenly since I went, or come unexpectedly? He did not expect that anyone had, anyone of importance to him. Between Merchant's Pigeons and White Tower Eyes and Ears, and Mazarim Taim, he must not forget Taim. Luz Theron snarled wordlessly at the name. With all those pigeons and spies and babbling tongues, in a few more days the whole world would be aware that he had vanished from Kyrian. All the world that mattered, here and now. Kyrian was no longer the ground where the battle would be fought. Dobraine's answer surprised him.
No one except Ailil Riatan and some high sea folk official are both missing since the attack.
A bare pause, but a pause. Perhaps he was not so sure what had happened either. Yet he would keep his word. He had proved that at Dumai's Wells, too.
No bodies were found, but they may have been killed. The Seafolk Wave Mistress refuses to countenance the possibility, though. She is raising a storm with demands that her woman be produced. In truth, Ailil may have fled to the countryside, or gone to join her brother, despite her pledges to you. Your three Ashaman are still in the Sun Palace, Flynn, Narishma, and Hopwill. They make people nervous, more so now than before.
The headmistress made a sound in her throat, and her shoes shifted audibly on the floorboards. They certainly made her nervous. Rand dismissed the Ashaman.
Unless much closer than the palace, none was strong enough to have felt him open a gateway here. Those three had not been part of the attack on him, but a wise planner might have considered the chance of failure, planned how to keep someone close to him if he survived. "You won't survive," Luce Theron whispered. "None of us will survive." "Go back to sleep," Rand thought irritably. He knew he was not going to survive, but he wanted to. A derisive laugh answered in his head, but the sound thinned and was gone. The bald man was letting the others climb down now, and rubbing his hands together in a pleased fashion. Of all things, the fellow seemed to be giving a speech. "Aelil and Shellen are alive, and they didn't flee," Rand said aloud. He had left them bound and gagged, stuffed under a bed, where they would have been found by servants in a few hours, though the shield he had woven on the Seafolk Windfinder would have dissipated before that. The two women should have been able to free themselves then. "Look to Cadswain. She'll have them in Lady Arlen's palace."
"Cadswain Sedai is in and out of the Sun Palace, as if it were her own," Dobryn said judiciously. "But how could she have taken them out unseen? And why? Aelil is Torum's sister, yet his claim to the Sun Throne is dust now, if it was ever more. She is unimportant even as a counter now. As for holding an Atha'an Mir of high rank, to what purpose?" Rand made his voice light, uncaring. "Why is she keeping Lady Caroline and High Lord Darlin as guests, Dobryn? Why do Aes Sedai do anything? You'll find them where I said, if she lets you in to look." Why was not a foolish question. He just did not have the answer. Of course, Caroline Damodred and Aelil Rhiannon did represent the last two houses to hold the Sun Throne, and Darlin Cisnera led the nobles in Tyr, who wanted him thrown out of their precious stone, out of Tyr. Rand frowned. He had been sure Cadswain was focused on him despite her pretense otherwise, but what if it was not pretense? A relief, if so. Of course it was. The last thing he needed was an Aes Sedai who thought she could meddle in his affairs. The very last. Perhaps Cadswain was directing her meddling elsewhere. Min had seen Cisnera wearing a strange crown. Rand had thought a great deal of that viewing of hers. He did not want to think of other things she had seen concerning himself and the Green Sister. Could it be as simple as Cadswain thinking she could decide who would rule both Tyr and Kyrian? Simple? He almost laughed. But that was how Aes Sedai behaved. And Shallan, the Windfinder. Possessing her might give Cadswain leverage with Harina, the Wave Mistress, but he suspected she had just been scooped up with Aelil to try hiding who took the noble woman. Cadswain would have to be disabused. Who would rule in Tyr and Kyrian had already been decided. He would point that out to her. Later. It stood far down his list of priorities. "Before I go, Dobryn, I need to give you..." Words froze on his tongue. In the stable yard, the capless man had pulled a lever on the wagon, and one end of a long horizontal beam suddenly rose, then sank, driving a shorter beam down through a hole cut in the wagon bed. And, vibrating till it seemed ready to shake apart, trailing smoke from the chimney, the wagon lurched ahead, the beam rising and falling, slowly at first, then faster. It moved without horses. He did not realize he had spoken aloud until the headmistress answered him.
"Oh, that. That's Mervyn Pole's steam wagon, as he calls it, my lord dragon."
Disapproval freighted her high, startlingly youthful voice.
"Claims he can pull 100 wagons with the contraption. Not unless he can make it go further than 50 paces without bits breaking or freezing up. It has only done that far once that I know."
Indeed, the steam wagon shuddered to a halt not 20 paces from where it first stood. Shuddered indeed, it seemed to be shaking harder by the heartbeat. Most of the men swarmed over it again, one of them frantically twisting at something with a cloth wrapped around his hand.
Abruptly, steam shot into the air from a pipe, and the shuddering slowed, stopped. Rand shook his head. He remembered seeing this fellow, Mervyn, with a device that quivered on a tabletop and did nothing. And this marvel had come from that. He had thought it was meant to make music. That must be Mervyn leaping about and shaking his fists at the others. What other odd things, what marvels were people building here at the Academy? When he asked, still watching the men in the courtyard work on the wagon, Idrian sniffed loudly. Respect for the Dragon Reborn held only a thin edge in her voice as she began, and quickly lost ground to disgust.
Bad enough I must give space to philosophers and historians and arithmetists and the like. But you said take in anyone who wanted to make anything new and let them stay if they showed progress. I suppose you hoped for weapons. But now I have dozens of dreamers and wastrels on my hands, every one with an old book or manuscript or six, all of which date back to the Compact of the Ten Nations, mind, if not the Age of Legends itself, or so they say. And they are all trying to make sense of drawings and sketches and descriptions of things they've never seen, and maybe nobody ever did see. I have seen old manuscripts that talk about people with their eyes in their bellies, and animals 10 feet tall with tusks longer than a man, and cities where...
But what are they making, Headmistress Tarson? Rand demanded. The men working on the thing below moved with an air of purpose, not as if they saw failure. And it had moved. She sniffed louder this time.
Foolishness, my lord dragon. That is what they make. Kin Tovir constructed his big looking glass. You can see the moon through it, plain as your hand. And what he claims are other worlds. But what is the good of that? He wants to build a bigger now. Meryl Harka makes huge kites she calls gliders, and come spring she will be throwing herself off hills again. Put your heart in your mouth to see her sailing downhill on the things. She will break more than her arm next time one folds up on her, I warrant. Jander Parentakis believes he can move riverboats with water wheels off a mill or near enough, but when he put enough men into the boat to turn the cranks, there was no room for cargo, and any craft with sails could outrun it. Rinanhara traps lightning in big jars. I doubt even he knows why. And Niko Takama is just as silly with her.
Rand spun around so fast that she stepped back, and even Dobrain shifted on his feet, a swordsman's move. No, they were not sure of him at all.
He traps lightning? He asked quietly.
Comprehension fluttered her blunt face, and she waved her hands in front of her.
No, no, not like that.
Not like you, she had almost said.
It is a thing of wires and wheels and big clay jars, and the light knows what. He calls it lightning, and I saw a rat jump down on one of the jars once, on the metal rods sticking out of the top. It certainly looked struck by lightning.
A hopeful tone entered her voice.
I can make him stop, if you wish.
He tried to picture someone riding on a kite, but the image was ludicrous. Catching lightning in jars was beyond his ability to imagine. And yet... Let them go on as before, Headmistress. Who knows? Maybe one of those inventions will turn out to be important. If any work is claimed, give the inventor a reward. Dobrain's leathery, sun-darkened face looked dubious, though he almost managed to conceal it. Idrian bowed her head in sullen assent, and even curtsied, but plainly she thought he was asking to let pigs fly if they could. Rand was not certain he disagreed. Then again, maybe one of the pigs would grow wings. The wagon had moved. He wanted very badly to leave something behind, something to help the world survive the new breaking the prophecies said he would bring. The trouble was, he had no idea what that might be, save for the schools themselves. Who knew what a marvel could do? Light, he wanted to build something that could last. I thought I could build, Luce Theron murmured in his head. I was wrong. We are not builders, not you or I, or the other one. We are destroyers. Destroyers. Rand shivered and scrubbed his hands through his hair. The other one? At times the voice sounded sanest when it was the most mad. They were watching him, Dobrain very nearly hiding uncertainty, Idrian making no effort to. Straightening as if nothing was wrong, he drew two slim packets from inside his coat. Both carried the dragon in a long lump of red wax on the outside. The belt buckle he was not wearing at the moment served for an impressive signet. "The top one names you my steward in Kyrian," he said, handing the packets to Dobrain. A third, still nestled next to his chest, for Gregorin den Loshenos, making him steward in Ilion. "So there'll be no trouble with anyone questioning your authority while I'm gone." Dobrain could handle that sort of trouble with his armsmen, but best to make sure no one could claim ignorance or doubt. Maybe there would be no trouble to handle if everyone believed the Dragon Reborn would descend on transgressors. "There are orders about things I want done, but aside from those, use your own judgment. When the Lady Elaine lays claim to the Sun Throne, throw your full support behind her." Elaine. Oh, light, Elaine and Avienda. At least they were safe. Min's voice sounded happier now. She must have found Master Fell's books. He was going to let her follow him to her death, because he was not strong enough to stop her.
"Ilyena,"
Lutheran moaned.
"Forgive me, Ilyena."
Rand's voice came out as cold as winter's heart. "You'll know when to deliver the other. Whether to deliver it. Pry him out, if need be, and decide by what he says. If you decide no, or he refuses, I'll pick someone else, not you." Perhaps that was brusque, but Dobrain's expression hardly changed. His eyebrows rose slightly at the name written on the second packet, that was all. He made a smooth bow. Kyrianen usually were smooth.
"It shall be as you say. Forgive me, but you sound as though you mean to be gone a long while."
Rand shrugged. He trusted the High Lord as far as he trusted anyone. Almost as far. "Who can say? The times are uncertain. Make sure Headmistress Tarson has whatever coin she needs, and the men starting the school in Camelon. The school in Tyr as well, until matters change there."
"As you say,"
Dobrain repeated, tucking the packets into his coat. His face betrayed no emotion now. An experienced player in the game of houses was Dobrain. For her part, the headmistress managed to look pleased and disgruntled at the same time, and busied herself smoothing her dress unnecessarily, the way women did when hard-pressed not to speak their minds. Complain how she would about dreamers and philosophers, she was jealous of the Academy's well-being. She would shed no tears if those others' schools vanished and their scholars were forced to come to the Academy, even the philosophers. What would she think of one particular order in Dobrain's packet? "I've found everything I need," Min said, coming out from the shelves, staggering slightly under the weight of the three bulging cloth scripts that hung from her. Her plain brown coat and breeches were very like what she had worn when he first saw her in Baerlan. For some reason, she had grumbled over them until anyone who knew her would have thought he was asking her to put on a dress. She smiled now, though, with delight and a hint of mischief. "I hope those pack horses are where we left them, or my Lord Dragon will have to be fitted for a pack saddle." Idrian gasped, scandalized to hear him addressed so, but Dobrain merely smiled a little. He had seen men around Rand before. Rand got rid of them as quickly as possible, since they had heard and seen as much as he wanted them to, sent them off with a final admonition that he had never been there at all. Dobrain nodded as if he had expected no less. Idrian looked thoughtful as she left. If she let anything slip where a servant could hear, or a scholar, it would be all over the city in 2 days. There was not much time in any case. Perhaps no one who could tell had been close enough to feel him open a gateway here, but anyone looking for the signs would be sure by now there was a Taviren in the city. It was not his plan to be found yet. When the door closed behind them, he studied Min for a moment, then took one of the scripts and slung it from his shoulder.
"Only one," she said.
Setting the others on the floor, she planted her fists on her hips and scowled.
Sometimes you really are a sheep herder. These bags must be 100 weight each.
But she sounded more amused than upset. You should have picked smaller books, he told her, pulling on riding gloves to hide the dragons. Or lighter. He turned toward the window to fetch the leather scrip, and a wave of dizziness hit him. Knees turning to water, he stumbled. A shimmering face he could not make out flashed through his head. With an effort, he caught himself, forced his legs straight, and the whirling sensation vanished. Luce Theron panted hoarsely in the shadows. Could the face be his?
If you think you'll make me carry them all that way, think again, Min grumbled. I've seen better pretending from stable hands. You could try falling down.
Not this time.
He was ready for what happened when he channeled. He could control it to some extent. Usually. Most of the time. This dizziness without Cydeen was new.
Maybe he had just turned too fast. And maybe pigs did fly. He settled the leather scrip's strap over his free shoulder. The men in the stable yard were still busy. Building.
Min. Her brows lowered immediately. She paused for an instant in drawing on her red gloves and began tapping her foot. A dangerous sign with any woman, especially one who carried knives. We had this out, Rand Bloody Dragon Reborn Althor. You are not leaving me behind.
The thought never crossed my mind, he lied. He was too weak. He could not make himself say the words to make her stay. Too weak, he thought bitterly. And she might well die for it. The light burned me forever.
It will, Luce Theron promised softly.
I just thought you should know what we've been doing and what we are going to do, Rand went on. I haven't been very forthcoming, I suppose. Gathering himself, he seized Cydeen. The room seemed to whirl, and he rode the avalanche of fire and ice and filth with nausea seething in his belly. He was able to stand erect without swaying, though. Barely. And just able to weave the flows of a gateway that opened into a snowy clearing where two saddled horses were tethered to a low branch of an oak. He was glad to see the animals still there. The clearing was well away from the nearest road, but there were still wanderers who had turned their backs on families and farms, trades and crafts, because the Dragon Reborn had broken all bonds. The prophecies said so. On the other hand, a good many of those men and women, footsore and half-frozen now on top of it, were tired of searching without any notion of what they were searching for. Even these nondescript mounts surely would have vanished with the first man to find them unattended. He had gold enough to buy others, but he did not think Min would have enjoyed the hour's walk to the village where they had left the pack horses. Hurrying through into the clearing, pretending the change from floor to knee-deep snow caused his stumble, he only waited until she had snatched up her bags of books and staggered through after him before releasing the power. They were 500 miles from Kyrian and nearer Tarvalen than anywhere else of note. Alana had faded in his head when the gateway closed.
Forthcoming, Min said, sounding suspicious.
Of his motives, he hoped, or anything but the truth. The dizziness and nausea faded slowly.
You have been as open as a muscle, Rand, but I am not blind. First we traveled to Rudion, where you asked so many questions about this Shara place that anybody would think you meant to go there.
Frowning faintly, she shook her head as she fastened one of her burdens to the saddle of her brown gelding. She grunted with the effort, but she was not about to set the other bag of books down in the snow.
I never thought the Aiel Waste was like that. That city is bigger than Tarvalen, even if it is half-ruined. And all those fountains in the lake? I couldn't even see the far side. I thought there wasn't any water in the waste, and it was as cold as here. I thought the waste was hot.
In summer, you fry during the day, but you still freeze at night. He felt recovered enough to begin shifting his own burdens to the gray's saddle. Almost enough. He did it anyway. If you already know everything, what was I doing besides asking questions?
The same as in Tyr last night.
Making sure every cat and blackbird knew you were there.
In Tyr, it was Chachin you asked about. It's obvious. You are trying to confuse anyone who tries to find out where you are and where you're going next. The second bag of books balancing the first behind her saddle, she untied her reins and climbed into the saddle. So, am I blind? Your eyes belong on an eagle. He hoped his pursuers saw as clearly. Or that whoever directed them did. It would not do to have them herring off the light new wear. I need to lay some more false trails, I think. Why take the time? I know you have a plan. I know it concerns something in that leather scrip. A sangreal? And I know it's important. Don't look so surprised. You barely let that bag out of your sight. Why not go ahead and do whatever it is you plan, then lay your false trails? And the real one, of course. You're going to turn on them when they least expect you, you said. You can hardly do that unless they follow where you want. I wish you'd never started reading Herod Fell's books, he muttered sourly, pulling himself into the gray saddle. His head spun only a little. You puzzle out too much. Can I keep any secrets at all from you now? You never could, Woolhead, she laughed, and then contradicting herself, what are you planning? Aside from killing Dashiva and the rest, I mean. I have a right to know if I'm traveling with you. As if she had not insisted on traveling with him. I'm going to cleanse the male half of the source, he said in a flat voice. A momentous announcement, a grand scheme, more than grand. Grandiose, most would say. He might have said he intended to take an afternoon stroll for all of Min's reaction. She simply looked at him, hands folded on the pommel of her saddle, until he went on. I don't know how long it will take, and once I start, I think everyone within 1,000 miles of me who can channel will know something is happening. I doubt I'll be able to just stop if Dashiva and the rest or the Forsaken suddenly appear to see what it is. The Forsaken, I can't do anything about. But with luck, I can finish the others. Maybe being Tavirin would give him the edge he needed so desperately. Depend on luck, and Corlin Dashiva or the Forsaken, either one will have you for breakfast, she said, turning her horse out of the clearing. Maybe I can think of a better way. Come on. There's a warm fire at that inn. I hope you're going to let us have a hot meal before we leave. Rand stared after her incredulously. You would have thought 5 renegade Ashaman, not to mention the Forsaken, were less bothered than a sore tooth. Booting the gray ahead in a spray of snow, he caught up to her and rode in silence. He still had a few secrets from her. This sickness that had begun affecting him when he channeled, for one. That was the real reason he had to deal with Dashiva and the others first. It gave him time to get over the sickness. If that was possible. If not, he was not sure the 2 Tirangreal riding behind his saddle were going to be any use at all.